Hello everyone, this is Caroline Ford. I've recently returned from a very enjoyable few days in Scotland. My mum, my sister and I went on a coach tour, and we stayed in Dunfermline, which at one time was the capital of Scotland. It's situated about 30 minutes north of Edinburgh. Dunfermline is probably best known to people in the United States as the birthplace of Andrew Carnegie. He was born there on the 25th of November, 1835, and the house in which he was born is now open to the public. He was at one time the world's richest man, but he gave away nearly all of his fortune to help the poor. One day we had a trip into Edinburgh, and while we were there, we took an open-topped bus tour, which showed us the sights of the city. And we also learnt a lot about Edinburgh and Scotland, past and present. I'd like you to come with us on the bus tour, but before we set off, just a couple of things. I'd like to thank everybody for the very kind comments that were made on my career podcast. I really do appreciate it. I won't name you all individually because I don't want to forget anybody, but you all know who you are, and thank you very much. And the music on this podcast is by Mike Oldfield, one of my favourite artists. The tune is called Flowers of the Forest, a traditional Scottish tune, and is taken from his 1996 CD called Voyager. So, on with the bus tour.
Welcome along, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Len. I'm your tour guide for today. If you want somebody else, have a look. You've got me. Lock the doors, you're in. That's it. If you've got any questions, by all means, don't bother me with them. No, of course you can. Just ask me, I'll do what I can. And if I don't know the answer, I'll find out someone who does. And hopefully I can answer your question before you leave the bitch. Now, you've probably noticed already, the most prominent feature in these parts is this Gothic Rocket, we call it, or Thunderbird 3. It's a monument to a man who wrote some books. Called Sir Walter Scott. You probably heard of him. Has anyone read a Walter Scott book?
No.
Because I was going to ask you if you ever read another one, but if you haven't read the first one, well, that's that. Most people read one and then that's it. I think I've read two. But he was a very popular writer at the beginning of the 19th century. The monument was erected in 1846, just 14 years after his death. The architect of the monument was a man called George Meikle Kemp. He wasn't an architect, actually. He was a draftsman. And he submitted plans under a false name because he wasn't an architect. But it was finally accepted. And he didn't live to see his monument completed. He was returning from a good night out and fell into the Union Canal and drowned.
Okay.
About a year before it was completed. Tragic.
Very good night out.
You can see the man himself, Sir Walter Scott, sitting beneath his monument there. There's another statue there of David Livingstone, who went to Africa and discovered the Victoria Falls. And when he died, his faithful retainers carried him all the way to the coast. Either loved him very much or were glad to see the back of him, I'm not quite sure. Now we're leaving the city and going out for a bit towards the end of the Royal Mile. And there's some monuments on a hill you're going to see in front of us in a little while. Before we get there, I'll talk about the Balmoral Hotel. The Balmoral Hotel was began life as the North British Railway Hotel above the station. It was bought some years ago, about 10 years ago, by the 40 organisation who changed its name. I don't know if it's a very good idea calling a place the Balmoral, really. It might attract a bit of riffraff, you know. Like the most dysfunctional family in Great Britain have a house called that too. So it's a bit dangerous calling the Balmoral, in my opinion. You can get a room in there for about £120 and you negotiate, get it down to 100 if it's late at night, so try it. The restaurants are not bad. Hadrian's is not to my taste, that's round the corner, but you have wonderful afternoon tea in there, especially on a Friday when you think you've died and gone to heaven, because there's a woman playing the harp in the gallery.
Ooh.
It's good value, but expensive, if you see what I mean. This is Register House on our left. Register House holds the Scottish Archive and was designed by probably the best architect we've ever had, a man called Robert Adam. He was a local man, Robert Adam. He came from across the river there. He and his brother were favourite architects of early 18th and 19th century. The man on the horse is the Duke of Wellington, and he's pointing the way back home for you English visitors. Down London Road. No, he was called Arthur Wellesley before he defeated Napoleon at the Battle of Waterloo. Became the most famous man in Europe then. These are all new offices. That was the ex-post office, now being let as offices. Look at the lovely Georgian architecture. And look ahead, can you see the monuments on the hill in front of me? The one that looks like a telescope, in fact, is meant to be a telescope. It's because it's in honour of Admiral Lord Nelson, who defeated the French forces at Trafalgar, where he died, unfortunately. But the white ball you can see on the top is dropped down the mast every day at 1 o'clock as a time signal for ships, when the 1 o'clock gun indeed is fired from the castle. This imposing building on our right hand side is Scottish office, where the civil servants used to be. It's now the Scottish civil servants. A very imposing grand building built in 1936.
It's windy.
Mm. Now the view on your right is quite imposing. We have the castle away behind us, right down to the Palace of Holyrood House at the foot of the street. That's 1.2 miles long, called the Royal Mile. You see all at one fell swoop. This building we're passing on our left was to be a Parliament building, but it was deemed to be too small. It's the ex-Royal High School of Edinburgh. This is a gorgeous terrace here.
This is
Regent's Terrace. There's some apartments to let here along here. That was the American consulate we've passed, the German consulate and so on. And some lovely private houses with gorgeous views over the valleys there.
Very,
I think you'll agree. That is a place to live if you're going to live in Edinburgh. That's if you've got the money, of course. Mm. 2.7 maybe million pounds.
Ooh.
For a terraced house. Big houses, mind you. That's the laburnum trees out. Gorgeous. The weather's been quite wonderful for a while. I'm glad it's actually quite cool now. I'm getting a bit sick of the hot weather. Oh, they're bowling. Look. Give them a wave. They hate it. As a bus goes past every 5 minutes, and I will say, wave, and we're all going. It reminds me about the American lady who once went to the Tower of London and was admiring the lawn, and she said, "Oh, how did you get your grass so beautiful?" And the man with the gardener said, "Oh, we just cut it once a week for 1,000 years. In fact, the Tower of London is 1,000 years old. We're going to turn right shortly, and we're going to go down to Holyrood Palace, and to also Holyrood Abbey, and to the Scottish Parliament building. The controversial Scottish Parliament building, I may add. I'll tell you how much controversiality it is. The cost is eye-watering, I should say. Cows, well. It's called Cow Parade. Now this is worldwide, most cities have it sooner or later. We have about 200 here and all over the city. Already one's been decapitated.
Oh.
Several have suffered amputation. And one's been stolen. Yeah. Under your arm and walk up the street with it. And what happens is that they're all auctioned off at the end of their period, and the money goes to local charities, and this is happening all over the world actually. So. I think it's wonderful. I'm going to miss them when they go. You're really bright and colourful. They're gorgeous.
Small ones.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Now look at the view ahead now. That's Holyrood Park. The peak in the centre is Arthur's Seat, 822 feet high. And there are people up the top now, I can't see them backwards. Yep. Now the view today is stunning. And the day like today you can see to the English border if you particularly wish, but there we are.
And that's about 70
miles away to England, you can see it.
Now,
There's a little building coming up past the traffic lights. You see that little stone building?
Yeah.
Now that's a very, well, reputedly to be Mary Queen of Scots' bathhouse. Where she was known to bathe twice a year in white wine, whether she needed to or not.
Oh, see you.
But I somehow doubt it. Can you see her trotting across there in a dressing gown in the middle of winter? No, I don't think so. I think it's either a gazebo. Actually, know the word gazebo comes? It's gazebo. You gaze out. A gazebo. Or a tennis pavilion. They used to play real tennis here. You know the game real tennis, which is played in a courtyard? That's what they played here. Nevertheless, it's a lovely little part of the palace.
That's Holyrood Palace.
Yes, Holyrood Palace. Holyrood Palace began as a hunting lodge, really. And before that, it was actually a sort of traveller's rest for visitors to the ruined abbey you can see there. It wasn't ruined then, but you know what I mean. The roof finally fell in 1775 and never repaired. Mind you, Oliver Cromwell burned it before that. Oliver Cromwell was just an Englishman to burn things, as far as we're concerned. And, do you know when Oliver Cromwell... Well, I'll tell you a bit later. This, there's a palace there, open to visitors. And the Queen's Gallery. Now, that's a very interesting place. The Queen's Gallery has the Queen's paintings in rotation. And here on our right is this controversial building I was mentioning. This is the Parliament of Scotland. Now, we were promised that building for £60 million. Now, we knew that was a touch optimistic. But it didn't prepare us for the reality of £430 million.
Oh.
And all through the construction, they denied it. Oh, it's not going to cost anything like £180. No, it's not going to cost anything like £280. It's not going to cost anything like £270. But it cost £430 at the end. And it's still not finished. One of the main beams in the debating chamber fell down about some months ago. And they're looking at it. It's cost them £400,000 to look at it. It's still hanging there.
Oh, I would have looked at it for less than that.
Now, this is what you call a public park, ladies and gentlemen. It's also a royal park. It's 6 square miles in area, about 11 square kilometres. And it's part of the Holyrood sort of state, really. And believe it or not, in ancient times, all this was sanctuary land. If you could reach here in front of your debtors, your creditors, I should say, if you could reach here, you were safe. And you could live all over here, completely safe from harassment. Have you heard the rhyme, round and round the ragged rock, the ragged rascals ran?
Yes.
Well, that's a ragged rock. The ragged rascals built that road up there as the first job creation scheme ever, designed by Sir Walter Scott to keep them out of mischief, because they were political agitators in the early 19th century, and he put them to work to do that, the ragged rascals. Now, a new building here, aplenty. We have the New Scotsman newspaper office here. The Scotsman newspaper is probably the most important Scotsman, with a tiny circulation, about 70,000 circulation, very small indeed. But it's the one you look up to see if you're still alive in the morning, you know, if your obituary's there. It has to, so you have to have it, if you know what I mean. That's where hatches, matches and dispatches are notified.
Yeah.
So you have to look up, see if you're in good health. Now, I'm going to tell you about that building in a minute on your right-hand side. Also, there's new apartments ahead and offices of all the movers and shakers in the Cognoscenti have all moved down here. Now, being so close to the Parliament, these apartments have a revolutionary, eco-friendly heating system. They use the hot air from the Parliament.
Of which there will be plenty.
It certainly used reinforced concrete beautifully, there's no doubt about it. Now, this is a magnificent exhibit on your right. This is Dynamic Earth. It's the history of the Earth, and it really is splendid. I do recommend it to you. Can you see the exhibits? I don't think so. Where are they? They're all downstairs. It's to keep the noise in. It's a very, very noisy exhibition of landslides, earthquakes, dinosaurs and so on. Mother Earth, there she is. That's a new cow. I had a different one there last week, which was flying up there, held down by ropes. Now look at that.
For it's like the dome.
Oh, it's funny you should say that. Yes, believe it. That's one of our. That was one of our Millennium projects as well. And unlike that dome you mentioned, this one makes money. And that's what I call a tent.
Yeah.
That's magnificent. I'd love to live in that tent. Can you imagine living in that? It'd be beautiful. Lots of people have weddings and receptions and so on, because it's really... Look at the setting too. For a geological exhibition, it's really splendid. Wonderful.
The Millennium Dome in London, the biggest drain on the public resources.
It's one of the nicest buildings in Scotland, I believe. The Moutharth Cues. Now, this building in the Scottish Parliament was designed by a Spanish architect called Enrique Morales, who died before it was completed. I bet he's glad. If you can be glad and dead, if you know what I mean. I'm just, yeah, are you looking up here? The MP's offices, yeah. The MP's offices, that might be little chairs in the window, that's the step bits, a little chairs where they can sit and talk to a constituent. You see the little things? Yeah, that one sits on one side and one sits on the other. It's like a little confessional boxes. Yeah, that's exactly it, yeah. It should be the MPs that are confessing. £57,000 a year salary. Some of them are running up £250,000 a year expenses each.
Wow.
But they're all being published on the web and all their expenses down to the last cup of tea. Because they've been, some of them have been fiddling it, yeah. One guy said he covered 250,000 miles in his car one year. Which wasn't true. What's going on? Just a noise. Now we're coming out to the palace again, and the sun's just come out, in case you hadn't noticed. And the palace is always associated now with Mary Queen of Scots. The Mary Queen of Scots had been married to the King of France, who died at the age of 18 from an ear infection just 3 months after they were married. She was 19. And when she came here, she was, caused a sensation, she was over 6 foot tall. Now that was skyscraper for a man in those days, and she loved to sing and dance and play music. She's a bit like Diana Frances Spencer, I think, same sort of imposing woman. And but it all went awfully wrong for her. She was a Catholic queen arriving in a Protestant country, and Scotland was really in the grips of a civil war between rival factions, and she could never back the right one. She married her cousin, who was Lord Darnley, and they had a child, James VI of Scotland, the first of England, the first king of a united kingdom. She had to flee to England eventually, throwing herself, as she thought, on the mercy of her cousin, Queen Elizabeth I, who imprisoned her in fear of her Catholic associations would bring about a Catholic resurgence to the throne. And she was executed on Elizabeth's reluctant orders after 19 years of this imprisonment. And it took 3 strokes of the axe to sever her head. The last stroke was a sort of... And the lips continued to move for some minutes thereafter. You just can't shut some women up, it's just tough. She probably said, you made a right mess of that, didn't you? It's tragic. I mean, in those days you were either on the winning side or you were dead. There was nothing in between, really. Just amazing times the way people were. Anyway, Mary Queen of Scots. And the Stuart dynasty has been singularly unfortunate ever since. The last one, Bonnie Prince Charlie, he nearly made it to London. In fact, he could have if he'd pressed on. And there'd be Stuarts on the throne today, if that's the case. It couldn't be any worse, that's for sure.
You don't like the pillow,
pardon me. I don't like any of them, they're all pug ugly, every single one of them. Apart from the latest breed, but that's a bit of common blood being brought in. Of course they are, they're called Gotha Saxe Coburg. Their eyes are all too close together. Don't like that. Not as beautiful Saxon featured people. I'm going to show you a lovely church shortly. This is the Canongate, ladies and gentlemen. Not the way you might think. It's nothing to do with gates or guns. Canons were monks, and gate is the walk of the monks, the walk to the abbey from the castle right down the street. Now look at this church there on our right. Canongate Kirk, built in 1688, no stained glass, just after the Reformation. But look on the very top. See the stag's head on the cross? Now, there's a legend attached to that. One Sunday in 1128, King David was hunting down near the bottom there, and this stag came out of the bushes and stuck its antler right through his thigh and pushed him off his horse. And he lay on the ground with the stag still in him, and he thought, oh my goodness, this is it. And he looked up and he saw a cross between the stag's antlers. The old name for the cross is a rood. He grabbed the cross and the stag galloped off. I believe it. And he believed it, more to the point, and he commissioned the abbey to begun on the spot. That was, the abbey was begun in 1128. And that's the legend of Holyrood. Holyrood, Holy Cross Palace, and Holy Cross Abbey. Canongate was where the rich lived. The ambassadors, this is before the union of the crowns and the union of the parliaments. They lived down here to escape the stench of the city. Now, 50,000 people lived up the top there without running water or sanitation. And on a windy day, you could smell Edinburgh, 15 miles away. Now, you see the World's End pub there? That was the end of Edinburgh. Canongate was a separate city. Edinburgh was its own city. And there was a great wall ran round here. In fact, you can see remnants of the wall ahead of the traffic lights. You see it there? That was a city wall. That one was built in 1513 after the Battle of Flodden. One of three walls, that was the last one. So this was Edinburgh. And this was to keep the English out, who came up here every summer and knocked the living daylight out. So you see, nothing's changed. And this was the war between England and Scotland that happened at the end of the 12th century, the one that William Wallace was involved in. And William Wallace met an awful end. He was executed on the 23rd of August, 1305, in London. And you know, if you've seen the film, it was much, much worse than that. I won't go into the gory details. Suffice to say, imagine having your heart shown to you, in front of you. And then they burned your entrails in a big fire. Then cut you into pieces and stuck you in poles all over the kingdom. What's going on here? Do you know when the restoration happened and Charles II came back onto the throne? They dug Oliver Cromwell up. They tried him, convicted him and hanged him. Then put his head on a pole in London Bridge for 25 years. And the great thing about that is it didn't hurt anybody. I think it's great. The cow gate we're in now, it's what you think it is. It was the way the cows came in and out of the city, the cattle, going out to maybe feed and coming in to be auctioned. Again, this is where the rich lived, away from a stench. But in the 1850s, things changed. The potato famine happened in Ireland, and indeed in Scotland as well, but it wasn't quite so serious in Scotland because we had other things to eat, like oats and fish and so on. But it seemed that the entire population of Ireland subsisted on potatoes. It said that a family of eight could live on an acre of potatoes. And that is quite efficient when you think about it. When it goes wrong, of course, it's horrendous. 8 million people lived in Ireland before the potato famine. The population of Ireland today is 4 million. 2 million died and 2 million emigrated. You see the great bridges which span the Cow Gate? These bridges are where the new town swept over the old town. You see a cow sticking out there? That bridge is the South Bridge. And the Cow Gate's always been this narrow canyon, high-rise buildings with masses of people living in them. During that period of 1850s, one of these tenements, a tenement building collapsed down here. 248 people were made homeless. Staggering. But reconstruction's going on a great deal, is it? We're all watching a football match there, yeah? You'll notice you haven't seen a single English flag on a car up here. You're not likely to either.
It wouldn't last long.
There's a certain sort of football competition on just now. I'm not quite sure what it is. I saw a car in Fife yesterday with two English flags on it. I thought, that guy's not careless with his life. I mean, he won't last long. Well, this is a grass market where all the cattle were auctioned. Anything that ate grass was auctioned here. Now, I want you to look ahead of that yellow box. Look down. You'll see a little garden with a cross just there. That's where the gallows stood. And you see the pub called Maggie Dixon's over there? Well, Maggie Dixon was hanged there in 1728 for allegedly killing a child. Her relatives were taking her home on a handcart to be buried when she revived. And she came back here some years later and opened a pub opposite the gallows. And ever since then, she was known as Half Hanged Maggie. Half Hanged Maggie. And she walked like that all the time. You would too if you'd been hanged. It's almost incredible, but it's true. Maggie Dixon. Now, I'm going to show you an architectural gem now on your right-hand side. Just look at that wonderful icon of architecture. I bet you know who owns that building. It's the Department of Work and Pensions. The government. You can tell, can't you? It's awful inside. And it's about to be demolished to build apartments. So let's hope it's a bit better than that. So this is what happened to cities in the 60s. They had architectural departments and everything in cities, and they made them build things like this. In the middle of Edinburgh, of all places. Now there's a lap dancing bar ahead called Buckinghare. Buckinghare, I wonder if you've heard of Buckinghare.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now Buckinghare were Irish labourers who came to Edinburgh to work on the Union Canal. But they found that a bit hard work, and they discovered something much more lucrative. They didn't dig people up, but they murdered people and delivered the bodies to the medical school. Now it was extremely lucrative. A body could fetch £10 in the early 19th century. That's about a year's work for a working man. So you can imagine the temptation. They used to meet people who wouldn't be missed, you know, itinerant workers and so on, and smother them by sitting on their chest and putting their hands over when they were drunk, basically. Now, nobody knows how many people they murdered. 16, some guess, maybe 19, we're not quite sure. But one morning, the medical students recognised a young woman on the slab. They'd seen her alive and well the night before, and some of them knew her quite well, if you see what I mean. And the hue and cry was raised. And eventually they're arrested, and Hare turned against Burke, gave evidence. And Burke was tried, convicted, hanged and dissected. And you can see his skeleton today in the Surgeon's Hall, if you wish. The judge said, you'll be dissected and your skeleton exhibited as encouragement for others, as they put it in those days. That's what they said. Now this area here on your right is about to be redeveloped as a new housing and mixed development area called Quarter Mile. Going to be really posh. Apartments from £200,000 to £1.2 million. On your left is a wonderful building. Guess when that was built? It was built in 1620. It's a school. It was a school then and it's a school now. George Heriot School. The George Heriot was moneylender to James VI. He was also his jeweller. He had a shop 7 foot square in a Royal Mile. And when he died, he left £22,000. That's equivalent to about £4.5 million today. And he left the money to be used to build schools for the poor in the city. 13 schools, including that one. That's now a private school. Fee paying, I should say. And 1 in 4 children in Edinburgh are educated privately today, including my son. It's somehow traditional, I don't know why. That was one of the earlier walls around the city. The city was smaller then. Yeah, that's larger than anywhere in Britain, private education. Nowhere it comes close to it.
No.
The schools are good too. That's why people don't spend their money for nothing. They're not daft. My son went to the school. It was expected that you got 6 hires. That's equivalent to A-levels. It was expected of you. So, not that they're any brighter than it. It's just that you do what's expected of you. Basically, that's it. I've worked for many outfits, some of them were awful and some of them were... So when you go into a place, you just really work to the expectation. If it's very high, you have to do that, and if it's very low, you just don't bother. So it's just the way it is. That's the medical faculty of the university over there. Students there have included Charles Darwin, Arthur Conan Doyle, Edward Simpson, who was a pioneer of biocides, and James Young Simpson, who used chloroform for surgery. Still a very important medical school today.
No.
Now I'm going to show you something really charming in a minute now. Once we go through the traffic lights, I want you to look down low and you'll see a tiny dog statue on top of a drinking fountain. And look into the left, you'll see the graveyard of Greyfriars Church.
Greyfriars Lovely.
Now, Greyfriars Bobby was a little Skye terrier who belonged to a policeman called Jock Grey. Now, Jock Grey used to patrol the grass market area, and everyone had to have a dog. Policemen had a watchdog, they call them. You know, just a lethargy of barked when things were happening. Now, Jock Grey died in 1848 and is buried in the churchyard. Look for the little dog now. You see him there? The end of the railings? Front of that white van just turning now. See the little dog?
Yeah.
Here it is.
Faithful little friend.
Now, this little dog followed in after the procession and sat on his master's grave that night and every night for 14 years till he died in 1872. The town council made money available to feed the dog every day at 1 o'clock at a restaurant across the street, and also gave the dog a little silver collar and a drinking bowl as a city present. And when he died, he became probably the most famous dog who's ever lived, apart from Lassie. And a film has been made, I don't know if you've seen the film, the Walt Disney film, very good, but I've made another one which is coming out shortly. And all together now, true story again, these are remarkable stories. Hey, fast, Bobby. Yep. That is one of the council buildings. You see it's undergoing some refurbishment. And this was used to be the MP's offices before they moved down. And if you see, look ahead too, you'll see a pub now called Deacon Brodie's Tavern. Deacon Brodie was a town councillor. You see his life story on the side of the pub. Deacon Brodie was a town councillor, but a burglar as well. And he was hanged just at the traffic lights there on the 1st of October 1788. 30,000 people gathered to watch. It was a marvellous occasion. Punch and Judy for the young ones and fast food, it was great all round. Just a marvellous day out for all concerned. We're coming down the mound now, ladies and gentlemen. The mound connects the old and new towns. It was one of the first crossings. It was made from all the rubble dug out from the... to build the new town. All the cartloads of earth were dumped up here. This dark building here on your left is the Divinity Faculty of the University, but it's also the meeting place of the Church of Scotland. They meet once a year there to elect a moderator. It's a very democratic church, the Church of Scotland.
Very wealthy church.
Coming down to the new town now, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, the people on the old town, the rich who lived there, I'd always looked across at this hill wondering if they could develop it, and eventually it happened. And a young architect called James Craig drew up the plans, and the work began in 1767. Three streets east to west, five north to south. Sorry? Okay, can we stop now please, and the next stop please, thank you. Just stop up the street here, okay? The floral clock on your left's been prepared. That's a clock entirely made of flowers.
I saw that before, didn't I?
Yes, I remember seeing that.
Just stopping here, then. This is Hanover Street, part of the new town. Here's the bus stop now. Thank you, bye-bye.
Thank you.
Now, when this town was begun, this was the most impressive residential city anywhere. It was built to the highest standards. After some of the squares in London and so on, we thought we could go better than that, and we did. Look how wide the streets are. Just moving up. is to allow a horse and four horses in the carriage to turn, such as wide streets. The House of Hanover was the royal dynasty at the time. George III was on the throne. He's the one that went mad and lost America. Have you seen The Madness of King George, the film? He had a disease called porphyria. Now, we reckon that Mary Queen of Scots had it as well, and he inherited it. Porphyria makes you pee red and go mad, basically. Yes, sir. I think so. I think it's still part of it, yeah. I think it can be treated today. But now, George IV was his son, and here he is here. George IV came to Edinburgh in 1822. He was the first monarch to visit Scotland in 200 years since Charles II. Now, when he arrived here, he caused quite a stir. He was wearing a mini kilt and pink silk tights. And the whole of Edinburgh was a sea of tartan. The clan chiefs came down from the Highlands with their supporters and camped all around the city. Now, that was quite unusual because, remember, tartan had been banned since 1745. Look at the assembly rooms of the chandeliers. And had the law was just rescinded. It was even an offence to wear tartan as trousers. It was a treason to wear tartan. And he wore tartan, the whole town wore tartan. And in fact, from that day, this idea we have of Scotland was, he created it, this tartan image, and all the stags up the valley and all this sort of stuff. He created it, that man. And in fact, Queen Victoria built Balmoral not long after, when she came onto the throne. So if you like, the royal family discovered Scotland. It's always been here, but they discovered it. Scotland was known as North Britain before that.
Oh.
What a funny idea, but there we are.
Britain.
Funny, really. It goes, so this is George Street, named after George III. It's now an upmarket shopping street, but you can still see how it was originally dwelling houses over there, behind the facades. I want you to look out for blocked off windows. You'll see some windows that have been blocked off. Some have even painted to look like windows, but are stone. So look out for that as we go around. Now that man there, William Pitt the Younger, youngest Prime Minister we ever had. He was the youngest Prime Minister we've ever had. And he was responsible for an obscene tax called the window tax, where people had to pay for the number of windows they had. So look ahead now, you'll see a little lighthouse flashing there. Do you see it?
Yeah.
That's the Northern Lighthouse Board offices. They maintain all the lighthouses around the Scottish coast. And since that lighthouse was erected, there's never been a shipwreck in this street. It's actually not true. One year during the Edinburgh Festival Cavalcade, some of the decorated trucks, one was decorated like a ship and ran into the one in front. Guess where? Right under the lighthouse. So it was all in the papers, you know. Shipwreck in George Street. What would you call that street, ladies and gentlemen? What would you name it? And that's what it's called.
Street.
Look at the white streets. That's a bit more like it was. They're stopping the traffic now. That's what it was like, probably, when the place was built. Wide, spacious. All residential. Apart from Rose Street and Thistle Street. That's where the shopkeepers were meant to keep to. Little side streets, one on either side of George Street. Rose Street that way and Thistle Street that way. But of course they've expanded into the whole place. What a pleasant day.
It is now. That sun is very warm.
Even today, where these offices have taken over, you can see the inside the spacious apartments with the high ceilings and some with chandeliers. Some of the handmade glass still in the windows. That means the windows are original. Look. These windows are now 200 years old. Look at the light fittings where they had candles. It must have been some place to live, if you had the money. Of course, the rich moved over here and left the poor behind. And it became a divided city for nearly 200 years, till the old town became fashionable once again. People moved back in. Oh, what's happening up here? Somebody parking. I don't think I'll be very patient for very long. That's better. Don't bring a car to Edinburgh. Please don't. You come back and you'll find it's been towed away. It costs you about £120 to get it back. It costs you a fine. It's £40 fine if you park it illegally. £60 if you don't pay in time. Look at these lovely apartments there. Chandeliers. Lloyd's TSB.
They were going to introduce a congestion charge, weren't they? I'm surprised.
That's the Church of Scotland's offices there. Quite imposing. Now, there's a square ahead. Remember, we had St Andrew's Square at one end, who is the patron saint of Scotland. So what should this one have been called? Come on, come on, the Union of the Parliaments and all that, come on. St Andrew and St... Yeah. Now, it should have been called St George, or George Square, after, in fact, George III. Now, there was a George Square in Edinburgh at the time where the university stands today. So he said, oh no, don't call it after me, call it after my wife. So we said, oh, okay, fine, fine. So we called it Hey You Square. No, we didn't. It's called Charlotte Square, after Queen Charlotte. And so it's Queen Street, that's named after her too. Wait till we get to it, it's when we get to it. This square was designed by one man, a man called Robert Adam. He designed a whole square, and that's unusual. He used to design individual buildings, but not a whole square. And when you see it, you'll be, well, I could have put this way, Bath's quite nice, but Edinburgh's got to be into contact with the Georgian architecture. Bar 38, what a trendy bar's here. Oh, traffic's awful. I have to excuse me, this is my fourth tour. Three's all right, but four's a bit much. You have to talk all the time, really. I could shut up, but it'll be a bit of a silence. I could maybe pass the mic round, you could give us a song. That's happened, actually. Now, ahead of us, you can see the square, and a statue in the centre of the square, a man on a horse. So I want you to have a look at this as we get close and see if you know who it is. It's not too difficult. Thank goodness for that. Right, I'll tell you a bit more about Edinburgh and its customs, especially food. Have you been eating Scottish since you've come here?
No.
You just arrived this morning, no doubt, eh?
Yeah.
Well, things you might try, apart from the inevitable haggis and Scotch whisky, well, we have a lot of nice seafood here, and especially beef, nice beef. And if you're going out to a restaurant, lots of restaurants have at the top of the menu Taste of Scotland, so look for that. We tend to specialise in Scottish ingredients or menus or whatever. Try some of our smoked fish, which is really excellent. We have our Arbroath Smokies, which are smoked haddocks, and they are beautiful. I mean, for breakfast, served with a lightly poached egg on the top, is absolutely gorgeous. It just runs all in, it's beautiful. Smoked salmon, of course. I particularly don't like smoked salmon, but I like cooked smoked salmon, but not raw smoked salmon. Lots of game. We have lots of game, especially venison, and game birds, especially short ones like grouse and pheasant and so on. So try some of these things, something out of the ordinary. Don't go for hamburgers or stuff like that. Please don't. Try something nice. You can have skirly, which is fried oatmeal, or clapshot, which is potatoes and onions and milk or butter. That's nice. Oat cakes, of course. When you have cheese, you don't have biscuits with your cheese. You have oat cakes. It's much tastier. Also, lots of Scottish cheeses. There's several cheesemongers in the city. One's called Mellis. Have a look for their cheese shops there. Beautiful cheese shops. Try some local produce if you can. So look at the square now, ladies and gentlemen. Look at that. The dark coloration is smoke from domestic coal fires. Edinburgh was called Auld Reekie, which means old smoky. So many domestic coal fires. Now, ahead of the bus at the corner, I've just passed that traffic light, you can see a green door. Do you see the green door as we start to turn? Sue? Did you see the green door? Well, that's the birthplace of the man who invented the mobile phone, Alexander Graham Bell. He's got a lot to answer for. He was trying to develop a hearing aid for the deaf. His wife was profoundly deaf, and he was a tutor of deaf people. And he went to Canada, and he was in a place called Brantford when he made the discovery, but he went to New York to publicise it. This is all one man's design. This was a church, St. George's Church, now an extension of Register House. Chandeliers in all the apartments. You fancy having a nice soiree up there, ladies and gentlemen? And here is the Georgian House. The Georgian House can be visited. And go in and see what it's like to live in a Georgian house. Really, really beautiful. Has anyone ever heard of Inspector Rebus?
Yes.
Well, if you go along this street there, just there, you find the Oxford Bar, where Inspector Rebus drinks, and indeed does his author, Ian Rankin. You see him in there some nights. I've seen him around quite a lot. He's got a disabled son in there, quite often on the streets. Coming down to Queen Street now, the second best street in the new town, named after Charlotte, Queen Charlotte. Again, very spacious apartments. Look at the thin window bars and handmade glass. Actually, you can buy new houses with handmade glass now. They give you it looks much more attractive in plain glass. It sort of ripples a bit. It gives a bit more character to you. There's actually new buildings being built in Edinburgh with handmade glass in them. It gives a lovely ripple. This makes the buildings come alive somehow when you see some handmade glass. These are private gardens, indeed private to this day. When Princes Street was first opened, you needed a key to get into Princes Street Gardens. But so many keys were copied that, just threw it open to everyone then. When it was first opened, the gardens allowed couples to stroll, but not to stop. Young women were not allowed in on their own at all. Times have changed. So these are similar to Princes Street Gardens, but still private. The laburnums are out. As you can see, we have masses of restaurants, over 1,000 in the city. Restaurants you might try, there's a chain called Howie's, which specialises in Scottish food. Howie's, there are several restaurants about the city. Just ask any taxi driver, he'll take you to the nearest one. Victoria Street is rather nice for restaurants. That's just off the grass market. But you don't have to go far. Look at the views now, ladies and gentlemen. Has the mist cleared? Yes, it has. That's the River Forth ahead there. Salt water at this place. It's the Firth of Forth, as it's called. A firth is a Scandinavian word, firth. It means fjord. Firth. Fjord, an inlet. Now we're turning into Heriot Row. Now I want you to look on your left hand side, just now, for the red door. See the inscription? Robert Louis Stevenson lived there from the age of 7. And in that garden there was a pond with an island in the middle and a one-legged gardener. I think he used that for treasure hunting. He was also a bit of a split personality, a respectable young man by day here, but at night he was to be found up in the old town. And I think he used that experience to write Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. He also wrote Kidnapped and Katrina, Charles with the Donkey, the Body Snatchers, just about everything. And I still read them today. But his family were even more famous than he was. He was hardly known in his own lifetime. His family built all the lighthouses round Scotland in the late 18th, early 19th century. They were called the Lighthouse Stevensons. Such was their fame. In fact, that building I showed you with the lighthouse, they built that little building for them. That was a sort of offices, their architectural offices before it was taken over by the Lighthouse Board. They were a phenomenal family. The first lighthouse they built was about 20 miles from here off the coast of Arbroath. And it's called the Bell Rock, they had a mast on it with a bell to warn the sailors, because the rock is covered twice a day with 12 feet of water, and they built a lighthouse on it. Now that is quite something. I wonder if they could hold their breath. In fact, one night they were waiting, they were building in between the tides with waterproof cement, and they had their boats tied up, and they looked around and the boats were gone, drifted away, and the tide was coming in, and I thought, well, this is it, 12 feet of water. But fortuitously, a shipping boat came by, a fishing boat came by, and they were taken off. Otherwise, they'd have been all drowned, because it's quite a bit out from our berth. And Robert Louis Stevenson died in Samoa, age 45. He was always searching for a better climate. He was a very, very sickly man. In fact, his house in Samoa was called Skerryvore, which is named after one of the lighthouses he was involved with. He was involved in the building of lighthouses, but his health was so bad he couldn't stand the conditions. Quite remarkable. You go into any bookshop in Edinburgh, you'll find a book called The Lighthouse Stevensons by Bella Bathurst, telling you all about them and what they built. They built all the lighthouses. The most northerly one's called Muckleflugger, to the north of Shetland. It's in the middle of nowhere, halfway to Norway. They were just amazing. You just had to go and do it. Sometimes they couldn't build, the weather was so bad, for maybe a whole season. They had to stop and come back the next summer. But they managed it. And they're all automated now. No lighthouse keepers. And you know, they used to have two lighthouse keepers till a disaster when they went to the lighthouse and found nobody on it. Either they killed one another or had fallen out or something. So there's always three lighthouse keepers thereafter. So one would keep the peace at least. Every second place is a restaurant.
Does the veterinary college still exist?
Yes, it does, yeah. We have a dental college too, and it's a great medical centre, Edinburgh. There's been expansion of especially the one in Glasgow, the veterinary college in Glasgow has expanded. But it's not so much agriculture now, it's mostly domestic pets and stuff, unfortunately. My wife, our cat suffered an injury last year. And my wife took it to the vet, and I didn't bother inquiring. I thought it was just minor cost, you know, whatever. She told me last week it cost £140 to get it attended to. I nearly killed her. I said I could have took it around the back and hit it with a shovel for less than that. £140 to get its legs seen to. Anyway, there we are. Now, the building ahead is the Royal Scottish Academy, the first gallery to be built here in 1831. And on top of it is a statue of Queen Victoria. It should have been in London, that statue, but she hated it. She said, it makes me look matronly. And so it did, because she was. So we got it back again. And we stuck it up there. The way I look at it, it stops the place blowing away in a windy day. It was made in 1841, that statue. Queen Victoria died in the 20th century, not many people know that. The 11th of January 1901 in Osborne House.
And the lovely island.
So she made it to the 20th century. Quite amazing. She was almost in both centuries at once. Was it 1831 she won the throne? Yeah, I said that. 1837, that's right. I'm going to show you three cows which are very interesting. If you look through this gap coming up on the left to the faraway corner of the National Gallery, you'll see three cows in white. See them?
Yeah.
Because inside the gallery is a statue, a copy called the Three Graces, and outside we have three cows called the Three Grazes.
Oh.
Which is quite good. There's a Rembrandt exhibition on in the gallery right now, which I recommend to you. Along with just about every painter you've ever heard of. It's quite wonderful. It's the best gallery outside of London. I'll be in London next week, so I'm looking forward to that. Now this imposing palace ahead of us on the right, in fact it's a palace to money, because that is the Bank of Scotland headquarters. The woman on the top is a goddess of plenty, and so she should be. It was established in 1695, the Bank of Scotland, just 4 years after the Bank of England. The Bank of England was established by a Scotsman, a man called William Paterson. Anyway, thank you for coming with us today, ladies and gentlemen. The tour is almost finished. If you wish to go around, well, by all means do so. You can travel for 24 hours with your ticket. Not at night, because we won't be here. So I hope you enjoyed your little tour around the city, and maybe let you know where you might want to visit next. My name is Len, I was your tour guide, and thank you for coming with us.
Len mentioned haggis while he was talking about Scottish food, and I thought some of you might have heard of haggis but maybe don't know what ingredients go into making one. We found a recipe for making your own haggis in a Scottish cookbook, and although haggis are widely available commercially, if anybody feels brave enough to try, here's what you have to do.
Haggis, which is served on the Burns anniversary, 25th of January, and St. Andrew's Day, 30th of November, carried aloft on a silver tray by a Highlander in full Highland dress, preceded by a piper playing a national tune. One stomach bag, liver, lights and heart of a sheep, a breakfast cup of oatmeal, 2 onions, 8 ounces of shredded mutton suet, salt and black pepper. Clean the stomach bag thoroughly and leave overnight in cold water, to which salt has been added. Turn rough side out, put the heart, lights and liver in a pan. Bring to the boil and simmer for 1.5 hours. Toast the oatmeal on a tray in the oven or under the grill. Chop the heart, lights and liver. Mix all the ingredients together with the suet, adding salt and pepper. Keep the mixture sappy, using the liquid in which the liver was boiled. Fill the bag a little over half full, as the mixture needs room to swell. Sew securely and put in a large pot of hot water. As soon as the mixture begins to swell, prick with a needle to prevent the bag from bursting. Boil for 3 hours, served with mashed potatoes and mashed turnip. This serves 6 to 8.
For those of you who, like me, don't quite feel able to tackle the haggis, we'll try another recipe which might be more to your liking. Len also mentioned oat cakes when he was talking to us and said how good they are with cheese. Well, I'm with him on that one. I very much enjoy oat cakes, but I must tell you they bear no resemblance whatsoever to cakes. The consistency is like thin, crisp crackers. They're widely available commercially, but if anyone feels inclined to try and make their own, here's a recipe from the same Scottish cookbook.
Scottish oat cakes. 8 ounces of oatmeal, a good pinch of salt, 1/4 teaspoon of baking soda, a dessert spoon of melted fat, butter or lard may be used, hot water. Put oatmeal in a bowl, add the salt and baking soda. Make a well in the centre and pour in melted fat. Blend in enough hot water to make a stiff paste, then knead and roll out as thinly as possible. Cut into triangles and bake on a floured tin in a moderately hot oven, 400 degrees, until the ends curl up and the cakes are crisp, 20 to 30 minutes. Alternatively, bake them on a hot girdle or frying pan. Serve with butter, honey or marmalade.
That recipe for oat cakes brings me to the end of this podcast. Thank you to my mum for reading the recipes, and thank you to you for listening. I hope you've found something of interest. If anybody would like to contact me, you may do so, as I'm a member of the BCT mailing list. Thank you for listening. And I'll be back with another podcast from Scotland sometime soon.